during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me. Us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Like a white professor said to me, Dr. Welsing, I hate to admit this, but in all social gatherings, when it's just us as white people and there are no black people present, we are saying negative things about black people. And the assumption is that everybody present is in agreement. I said to the person, that I understand is simply talking code about the maintenance of the system of racism and white supremacy. See, this is so important for black people to understand. Not for the purpose of we don't have time to hate white people, but we have time to understand this 500 plus year system of thought, speech, and action. Out of our respect for ourselves, to understand it and to see that this behavior on the part of a tiny minority of people on the planet who classify themselves as white, that this behavior comes to an end. But it won't happen if, we say nigger doesn't mean anything, or defecating on a person or urinating on a person doesn't mean anything. It means that I have you in such a position of submission to me that I can do anything that I want to do to you, and you can't do anything about it.
Services on this kid. Don't quit with me, boy.
Why are you yelling?
You hear me? Get your ID now.
ID.
Now. Get your ass back in the car. Stop playing games with me. Give me some ID now.
Why are you being so hostile?
Because you give me. I'm tired of it. Give me some ID.
I can't even try to be here if I ain't got
you. You ain't being it. Give me some ID now.
For what?
I want to know who this baby's going with now.
You're with me, Alan Floyd.
No, give me your ID.
My name is Alan Floyd. You can look me up. My name is Alan Floyd.
If you lying to me one time, I'm taking your ass to jail. You understand me?
Baby, man.
Come on.
Stop calling me boy, man. What you doing?
I'm going to fuck you up.
I just told him my name. I just told him my name.
Get the baby.
Why are you grabbing the baby? You fucking
shit. What are you doing,
man? Shut up. I ain't doing nothing.
You're going to go, man.
I ain't doing nothing.
You listen. Get your drunk ass
over there. Come on, move, man.
You going to understand me? You going to communicate?
Yeah. Why are you doing that to me, man? Look at my son. He got a problem.
You don't get it.
I didn't. You asked me to give my name.
You said I'll get
you. You said I'm going to be in trouble. I said my name.
I'm going to ask you the first time. Give me your ID.
My name is Alan Floyd, sir.
We're going to go the hard way. We're
still. No, it's not the hard way. It's the sensible way. You can communicate like
no.
Men.
I have to give you ID. You said I don't have to give you my ID.
No, I did not say that. I said what for?
I told you three times.
Well, I never said I wouldn't give you my ID. No, nothing. I never said I wouldn't tell you my name. I asked you what
for. Get in the car.
This is it. Get my ass. Everybody get in the car.
It's going to get nasty real quick, bro. Come over here and talk to me, man. Get her under control for her. Get her under control.
I'm trying to just move over here.
Sit down in the car.
Get down in the car.
Get in the car.
Get in the car, man.
Okay, grab your baby. Grab your baby so the cop's crying. You going to talk to me like a man? You come over and talk to me. Have a seat right in here. He says Alan Floyd.
Why don't y'all take a look at that sign up there? See what it says? Cash for your home. You know what that is?
It's Billboard.
What are y'all, Amos and Andy? You step in and he's fetching? I'm talking about the message, what it stands for. It's called gentrification. It's what happens when the property value of a certain area is brought down. Huh? You listening?
Yeah.
They bring the property value down. They can buy the land at a lower price. Then they move all the people out, raise the property value, and sell it at a profit. Now, what we need to do is we need to keep everything in our neighborhood, everything, black. Black-owned with black money. Just like the Jews, the Italians, the Mexicans, and the Koreans do.
Ain't nobody from outside bringing down the property value. It's these folk shooting each other and selling that crack rock and shit.
Well, how you think the crack rock gets into the country? We don't own any planes. We don't own no ships. But we are not the people who are flying and floating that shit in here. I know every time you turn on the TV, that's what you see, black people selling the rock, pushing the rock, pushing the rock. Yeah, I know. But that wasn't a problem as long as it was here. Wasn't a problem until it was in Iowa and it showed up on Wall Street where there are hardly any black people. Now, if you want to talk about guns, why is it that there's a gun shop on almost every corner in this community?
Why?
Tell you why. For the same reason that there's a liquor store on almost every corner in the black community. Why? They want us to kill ourselves. You go out to Beverly Hills, you don't see that shit. But they want us to kill ourselves. Yeah, the best way you can destroy a people, you take away their ability to reproduce themselves.
Yeah.
Who is it that's dying out here on these streets every night? Y'all.
Yeah.
Young brothers like yourselves.
What am I supposed to do? Fool roll up, try to smoke me? I'm gonna shoot the motherfucker if he don't kill me first.
You're doing exactly what they want you to do. You have to think, young brother, about your future.
It's February, which, as anyone in Virginia can tell you, is Blackface History Month. Today, Virginia had its third blackface scandal in a week. There's so much blackface in Virginia, I bet when you go to get your shoes shined, the kid asks you, what are we doing today, mister? The feet or the face? What are we going with? This time it came out that when the state's Senate Majority Leader was editor of his school yearbook in 1968, he filled it with pages and pages of blackface photos, which is disgusting, right? And also extremely confusing for any of the old alumni who are starting to lose their memories. Because if you're old and you're going through your yearbook and you're just like, oh, wow, I was so young and black back then, right? And before you say, oh, of course this would happen in Virginia, just a bunch of ignorant rednecks, let me assure you, there is plenty of elegant, high-end blackface going on as well.
Luxury fashion brand Gucci stopped selling a sweater after criticism that it resembled blackface. It covered the lower half of the face and featured a red cutout around the mouth. Many on social media called the design offensive. Gucci pulled the sweater and apologized, saying it was a powerful learning moment and that it's committed to increasing diversity.
Okay, what the f***, Gucci? Why would you make that? What, like, even as a clothing item, what is, why would you make that? And where would you even wear that? Skiing? I mean, I guess if you're skiing, no black people would see you, but still, it doesn't make it okay. And you know what? I'm sick of companies saying this was a powerful learning moment for us, because they never actually seem to learn. You know how they'll really learn? Is if these companies have to pay black people every time they do racist shit like this. That's what I propose. Every single time, they gotta pay black people out. At least that way, black people get something out of it, you know? Just guys on the street like, damn, man, you get a new car? Yeah, H&M did another monkey ad, man. Oh, shit, for real? I need to check my account.
I know this has been a very difficult week for you in the state of Virginia, so where would you like to begin?
Well, it has been a difficult week, and you know, if you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary. Just 90 miles from here, in 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe. And while...
Also known as slavery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we have made a lot of progress in Virginia, slavery has ended, schools have been desegregated, we have ended the Jim Crow laws, easier access to voting, it is abundantly clear that we still have a lot of work to do. And I really think this week raised a level of awareness in the Commonwealth and in this country that we haven't seen certainly in my lifetime.
And why you think you still deserve this job when so many people are calling for you to step down?
Well, again, we have worked very hard. We've had a good first year, and and I'm a leader. I've been in some very difficult situations, life and death situations, taking care of sick children. And right now,
because you're a doctor, yes.
Right now, Virginia needs someone that can heal. There's no better person to do that than a doctor. Virginia also needs someone who is strong, who has empathy, who has courage, and who has a moral compass. And that's why I'm not going anywhere. I have learned from this. I have a lot more to learn. But we're in a unique opportunity now. Again, the 400-year anniversary of the history, whether it be good or bad, in Virginia, to really make some impactful changes.
We have slavery in this country,
yes.
In this state, yeah. Did you ever think about resigning when the drumbeat became so loud? And by the way, they're still beating for you to step down.
I don't live in a vacuum. And
yes.
So, yes, I have heard it. And this has been a difficult week. And again, I'm fine. It's been mainly difficult for Virginia and this country. So, yes, I have thought about resigning, but I've also thought about what Virginia needs right now. And I really think that I'm in a position where I can take Virginia to the next level, and it will be very positive. And, you know, we have a number of inequities in this country right now and in Virginia, and we're in a position to really stop talking so much and now to take action with policy to address a lot of these inequities.
Remember, the first time that we were talking about this governor was on the policy of the abortion issue, the third trimester abortion issue. We've gotten away from even talking about that, and we're going into his contempt for life, his contempt for people of color. And then now we've gone into the lieutenant governor. This is just, which is actually a criminal accusation. So they've really got to just wipe everything clean, start all over so that we can govern and let people handle their issue.
I just want to add to what the Congresswoman is saying. This is not just about people of color. I want folks to understand this. This is anti-blackness. So let's make this clear. This is anti-blackness, blackface in the mid to late 19th century, 1800s, was about mocking black people, our humanity, our beauty, our culture, what we mean to this country. So this ain't a conversation about people of color. This is a conversation about anti-black racism, white supremacy in the United States of America.
So I do think we need to have this conversation, and we should continue to have this conversation, but it has to be front and center, and we can't forget about the person who is dividing us and who himself is injecting this into the country to live up again and coming out again. And we haven't seen it be this bad in recent time, till the president has really made this a race issue, whether it's about African-Americans. Certainly, he's doing it all over the board with immigrants, but we need to have this conversation.
I cannot.
What?
I just can't. 1984, 1980,
right.
Gucci just a few days ago. This is not about President Donald Trump. This is about racism in the United States of America. Congresswoman, I hear you, but on this, we're not blaming President Trump.
I'm saying that he has divided this country. Let me just say this. He is using
race as an
issue.
I am not going to continue to let politicians use this man as the excuse to deal with racism in this country. It's been going on for far too long in the United States of America. We need some real truth and reconciliation. Yes, President Donald Trump is a racist. There is no doubt about it. But as we have seen, Democrats delve in racism as well. We got to stop making this about who's a Republican, who's a Democrat.
Right.
I want to know who's a humanitarian.
That's right.
I want to know who's going to stand up for people's lives, starting with black lives, because when you take care of black lives, everybody's life is taken care of. Everyone's life is taken care of. So no more about this. These three men, it had nothing to do with President Trump. What Lieutenant Governor Fairfax is going through don't have nothing to do with President Trump. Northam wearing blackface don't have nothing to do with Donald Trump. Harrington wearing blackface has nothing to do with Donald Trump. This is about racism in the DNA of this country, and I am over it.
Exactly,
we are traumatized, Jake, and we are sick of it.
You know,
now, politicians need to stop playing games.
Now, Italian luxury fashion brand Gucci has found itself embroiled in controversy over a polo neck sweater. Numerous people were quick to point out that the £670 balaclava-style garment resembles a person wearing blackface.
Balaclava knit top by Gucci. Happy Black History Month, y'all.
I want to hear from the brains behind this design and from the people who approved it for production. This is why you need a diverse workforce.
For a company of your stature, it's really shocking.
Well, Gucci has since apologized and removed the polo neck sweater from its website, saying the item will also be withdrawn from its stores. The company also issued a statement stressing its commitment to diversity. And on this issue, RT UK gained the thoughts of political commentator Andre Walker and body confidence advocate Joanne Morales.
I think the fact that it was released during Black History Month in America shows that it's very intentional towards something. I mean, this isn't the first major brand to do something so silly. So I think they didn't learn from Prada. And what they thought is, actually, we can use this as a marketing strategy. We'll apologize. It doesn't matter if we hurt people's feelings. It doesn't matter if it's racist. And I think that they planned every step of the way completely.
Well, you would have foreseen the backlash if you'd have had any idea that this looked like a black person, which of course it did not. Just to explain to those of your viewers who haven't seen it, it's effectively a black turtleneck that goes up just to around here and then has an opening for your mouth. It doesn't look like any black person I've ever seen in my life. I mean, firstly, can I just point out, and I'm not being funny, that black people are not black in the same way that white people like me are not fully white. If there was a white T-shirt that a black person were to wear, I wouldn't say it was ridiculing me for being white. It's just rubbish.
If we had suffered racism back in history, how black people did, we would also be offended. We can't stand here and say that's not offensive when you're not the one suffering from it. It's actually, in fact, black people that find it offensive, and they have every right to feel offended. Right. They were the ones that suffered with racism. They were the ones that went through the blackface.
Okay. How many people are offended by this? Where was the outrage? Or was it just a few members of what I call the racism industry, people whose job it is to be offended by this so they can talk about it
so
in the media?
So let me ask you
it's
another
professional
question. Do you think
racism industry that's offended?
Right.
It's not real people.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think if there was a black person in the production team, in the management team, in the marketing team, they would have said, yeah, no, that's fine, go ahead with it, especially after what happened with Prada? Did you see what happened with Prada? Do you agree with Prada? And let me ask you another question. Why didn't they bring it out in every other colour? Why black with red lips?
Point number one.
Why not green and orange? Why not white and pink? Why black and white? Why black and red? Why black and red? Why not red and pink? Why not orange? Why not green?
Hang on. Why are these garments always black? Because the most ubiquitous colour, the most popular colours for garments are black or white. Why are people offended? Well, actually, in truth, I think you've offered no evidence to suggest that most people are offended. I think very few people are offended. But I think the racism industry, of course they're going to say they're offended. In reality, it's a turtleneck you pull over your face and it happens to come in black. Goodness me, get a life.
It's a black-faced turtleneck. Yeah, it's a black-faced turtleneck.
Saying, so we don't have to force them to like us. We don't have to force them to accept us. But what we do have to do is stop spending our motherfucking money with people who gonna continue to give you their ass to kiss.
Something that is very destructive. Whatever is going to cause destruction is evil. That's basically it.
Okay.
Now, everybody is capable of doing something that is destructive. And the white supremacist wants to emphasize destructive activity, evil activity. Something that's going to always have a non-constructive result among dark-skinned people. This is their goal. They don't want to see non-white people doing anything that's constructive. They panic when they see that. If you're doing anything that makes sense, they practically lose their minds. No, we can't have them like that. We have got to have them in a state of mind where they're doing stupid stuff all the time, destructive stuff all the time. Anytime that you look up and dark-skinned people are coming around, something very ugly is going to happen. Because they're going to make ugly things happen because we teach them to do ugly things. And we want to keep them in that frame of mind. If we lose that grasp on being able to control their behavior in a manner that they are non-constructive, except when we want them to be constructive, when we want them to be constructive for our benefit, then we'll allow them to do something constructive. But when they're among each other, see to it, watch them real close, and see to it that they don't do anything constructive. because when they do something constructive, it means we are out of business, and we don't intend to be out of business. And what is our business? Mistreating people based on color. That's our business. That's our reason for being. That's our only reason for wanting to even breathe or be on the planet. What is the purpose of white supremacy? Mistreating people based on color for the fun, glory, and material benefit of people who are classified as white. That's the purpose of white supremacy in the modern day. Initially, it may have been another purpose, like genetic survival. But now they have been on such a roll for so long, it's for fun, glory, and material gain for the benefit of people classified as white and for the complete confusion, destruction, and self-destruction among people classified as non-white. That's how they think the entire planet should be run forever.
We getting that money, nigga. Downtown in the building.
I'm a nigga with money. I'm a nigga with money. I'm a nigga with money. And I don't love that bitch. I tell a bitch, 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 make me rich. I'm a nigga with money. And I don't love that bitch.
Yeah. Don't kill me, even though I teach you how to do it. Kill your brother and the fella down the street. And anybody who remotely looks like you, kill it. Kill it. Harm it. Kick it. Curse it. Write a song about kicking it and killing it and cursing it. And try to get everybody to listen to it. And then go out and do it and try to get them to do it. And call that our culture.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life Radio Show. Thank you for joining us tonight, February the 12th, 2019. We have a special show for you tonight. Hopefully, you find it constructive. Real versus perception in America. Now, Brother Roz, are you there?
Yes, I just had myself muted, so, you could just get the introductions out. I'm there.
Okay. Now, I wanted to ask you this question. Real versus perception. Now, All of those clips that we played, they all kind of flow right together with what's going on tonight. And it was stated in one of those clips, escapes me right now. I'm going to just have to come back to that. I'm going to have to come back to it. It unlapsed my mind. But
no problem.
I know you had health articles you wanted to get to. Did you want to get to those or jump right into these clips?
No, actually, I didn't have any health articles this week. I was supposed to. I know I had some clips, but I never actually gave those to you that were health related. And then I didn't actually have any health articles at this time. I have some, but I just didn't have access to it to get it together. I did have one article that relates directly to the clip you played on blackface and the Gucci controversy. So this one is from CNN, and it's entitled "A Third of Americans Say Blackface is Okay for Halloween Costumes." So this is basically telling you that a third of white folks think blackface is okay for Halloween costumes during Black History Month. The same month that Gucci chooses to put out a blackface sweater. Like, you just see the theme there, like the complete and utter disrespect and racism, white supremacy, psychological terrorism. It's just really palpable. And remember that Gucci is the one of the main companies that put Dapper Dan out of business. Dapper Dan was a very well-known clothing designer in Harlem, Black clothing designer for the stars, and he dealt with a lot of almost every famous rapper was there. Mike Tyson was there. That's where he had the fight with Mitch Green when he broke his hand and broke Mitch Green's face. That was at Dapper Dan's. And they actually put him out of business because he was able to make just about anything with the designs of any the European designer. So a lot of rappers would go there and get MCM outfits and Gucci and Fendi and all of that stuff. They even had bulletproof vests he would make. And it would be, you know, outlined with, you know, let's say Louis Vuitton logo all over it, but it was a bulletproof vest. Like he was that, he was just incredible. They put him out of business and then they turned around and wanted to do a documentary on his life. And this was just a couple of months ago this came out, because I put it on BTR Community too. And then now today you have this blackface controversy, you know, Black History Month, quote unquote, February 2019. So yeah. So it says here, this is a, I just find the statistic interesting. It says about a third of Americans are black, sometimes okay, with Halloween costumes, according to a Pew Research Center poll that reveals divides on the issue of new political lines. Wearing blackface is always acceptable for Halloween, 15% of respondents say, while another 19% said it's sometimes acceptable. The survey was conducted mostly before recent controversies over blackface world politics in Virginia, where the governor and attorney general both admitted to darkening their skin as part of costumes. And there's a long line of politicians and celebrities who have gotten black flack, excuse me, for wearing blackface. One in about three, or 34% of Americans, say it's always or sometimes acceptable to wear blackface as part of a Halloween costume. The issue has sparked a debate since So it says now, according to Pew, Billy, more than a slight majority, 53% of all American adults think it's unacceptable for a white person to use blackface in a costume. Blackface dates back to minstrel shows. The origins of blackface date back to the minstrel shows of the mid-19th century. White performers darkened their skin with polish and cork and put on tattered clothing and exaggerated their features to look stereotypically, quote-unquote, black. First minstrel shows mimicked enslaved Africans on southern plantations, depicting black people as lazy, ignorant, cowardly, or hypersexual, according to the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. The performances were intended to be funny to white audiences, but to black people, they were demeaning and hurtful. Then they say they have differences among political lines. In the Pew survey, Republicans and Republican-leaning independents were much more likely to see blackface as acceptable than Democrats. A quarter of Republicans say it's always acceptable, and half of Republicans say it's always or sometimes okay. Only 21% of Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents say it was always or sometimes okay. I'll stop there. So, and even going to black people, too. Let me just do that, and then we'll shut it down there. It says the poll results also revealed the racial divide. Among white people, 39% thought blackface was always or sometimes acceptable as part of a Halloween costume, compared to only 18% of black people, wow, 28% of Latinos. More than half of black Americans, 50%, say blackface as a part of a Halloween costume is never acceptable. White Americans between 18 and 29 were significantly more likely than those over 30 to believe that blackface isn't acceptable. 26% of these younger white Americans said it was always or sometimes okay, compared to 39% of whites between 30 and 9 and 45% of 50 to 64-year-old white people. So there, I stopped there. Man, I find that to be quite interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, not to be expected, though. I think that's probably the biggest thing we have to take hold of, is to expect these things. This has become it's reoccurring. I mean, you could go down a list of how many times this done happened. But I had checked something out from Red Pill, and he was like, that was an indicator to get the black people to stop wearing and consuming their products. What you think about that? Because that's it's obvious they don't care. Like I said, it's a strategic move to do it in February. And for those of you who haven't seen the video, like, it's not just a turtleneck. They even got, like, just a little face scrap. You know, you just walk around with the lips on. They.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Yeah.
They still have festivals over there doing this. So they
all the time. The Dutch do. A lot of European countries, the Norwegians, I believe. I know the Dutch do. There's a bunch of them, and they have like you said, entire festivals where it's like thousands and thousands of people all wearing blackface. They dress up like different. I think one is Peter the Negro is one of the celebrations they have. They have a bunch of different ones by different names, but it's all about mocking black people pretty much. Even in Dragon Ball Z, they got a blackface character. I forget what his name is, Mr. Something, and he's kind of heavy set, and he has big red lips, and they dress him like a genie sometimes. I forget his name, but literally they have a blackface character in Dragon Ball Z as well. But what I think is a twofold thing with the Gucci situation. It is a way for them to distance black people because none of them ever liked black people wearing their products. None of those groups, whether it's Givenchy or Moschino or what's his face? Killed by Andrew Cunanan, I'm forgetting his name, Versace. All of these people did not like black people wearing their stuff at all. They actually thought that, or their attitude about it was that we were bringing down their brand. But yet, like T.I. said in that video, because I saw the whole thing, we are the reason that those brands blew up. It was only when rappers started putting these designers' labels in their raps, whether it was Biggie or any other rapper that was doing it, it's what did it. Same thing with Tommy Hilfiger back in what they would call the golden age. A ton of rappers will always rap about Tommy Hilfiger. Tribe Called Quest got records talking about Tommy Hilfiger, this, that, and the third. Grand Poobah, there's a bunch of them. And every time these people sell, they skyrocket.
I tried to find that Pimp C. Well, he said he wore Polo.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Polo, same thing. And it's funny because Polo, even there was a New York City gang that ended up having a famous rapper that was known as the Lolas, and that's all they did was steal Polo. And they actually made it even more famous because they were rocking in rap videos. They would just rob anything with Polo and wear anything with Polo from head to foot. And these guys actually made Polo famous, and Polo actually admitted that in magazines. Like, they ended up collaborating with Polo, and they stole like probably millions of dollars worth of clothing from Polo over the decades going back to the 80s. And now, like, they have like different, some of them have different contracts with them because they've now collaborated, because as much as they made them well known. So this is really something that's not new at all. I've always said that Gucci and all of that stuff is, you know, garbage, and I wouldn't ever buy anything with those labels on it just for the fact that it was always apparent that they didn't want you wearing their stuff. So I think that that was one thing. But the other aspect, beyond the blatant racially offensiveness of what they did and doing it during Black History Month, I also think it was a barometer gauge for where collectively Black people are psychologically, and whether or not we were going to tolerate that and just let that go by without us ever saying anything about it, versus whether or not there was going to be a backlash about it. And I think it's really something that could gauge the racial awareness of the collective of Black people in this country to see, gauge where we are. Because they've gotten away with so much, especially with the anti-sexual agenda. That's just, it's such a cancerous infestation in our amongst our people, as far as just it being propagated on us, it being presented to us as a viable lifestyle, it being shown to us everywhere we turn, with Black people playing, you know, different forms of homosexual characters. It's just an infestation in our psyche of that. But now I think there's other things that they're testing for to see where we are psychologically, as far as our conscious awareness of what's being done to us. And I think that that was the other side of that equation as well. I don't know if you have something else to add, or even another angle of perception to add, but that's what I would say. No, it was a barometer, as well as, yes, blatantly offensive to say, look, we don't like you so-and-so's wearing our product. And, you know, we're going to go back to the early 1900s when we used to abuse the heck out of you and make fun of you. And we're going to put it on a sweater. And also, let's see how they react to it. y'all let us know if they're really, if we have them that stupefied, or are they in a thinking position about racism, even though we know for a fact we've done an exemplary job with the anti-sexual, psychological, and social indoctrination. But go ahead, I'll cede the floor to you.
Nah, that's wonderful right there. A barometer. And there's probably some other ways that we ain't thinking of right now, the reason why they used it and how they're using it. Because, you know, they just scratching it out with this fake apology. It really gives meaning to when they tell you not to ask white people for apologies. You know they empty. And just to use that to cross
that's
over.
That's like asking for a treaty.
The fine print. Mm-hmm. The governor, when he admitted to wearing blackface, and then talked about the 400 years of the indentured servants, which the sister corrected him, slavery. I thought it was very, very telling when he came with, he thought about resigning, but then he thought about Virginia and they needed him and he was the perfect person to fix it. I thought that was very telling. And also another important point to pay attention to is when he when he was talking about y'all didn't get to see that part, but they changed the whole subject to the black senator. So they steadily find shots at us. Excuse me, I guess that was a metaphor, huh? But that's what it always comes back to.
It is a form of warfare, so I think it's an apropos metaphor.
Man.
The thing about the governor situation is that I've always said this, and I added a few other mental illnesses, but in the beginning, I used to always say that racism, white supremacy is a combination of three functional mental illnesses in combination with an acute terror of genetic annihilation. And those three mental illnesses are narcissism, psychopathy, and sociopathy. So if you look at that governor, they all right there on full display. You've been exposed as a racist, wearing blackface, mocking black people. You go and you lie about how Africans got to the shores of this country when whites invaded this land and killed off the indigenous people and said that we were indentured servants. Like if we came here looking for a come up, like, okay, I'll work off these 7 years. And then after that, you're going to treat me like a human being. So there's the lie right there. And then on top of that, oh, I know I did something that was offensive and I've been exposed, but I'm also want to be the savior. I have to be, you know, it's the Jesus Christ syndrome. And it's a narcissistic approach that white people take with everything. If there's so many arenas in which they've done the same thing. They'll do the most racist thing and then turn around and then want to play that they're the good guy. And his whole entire ability to try and shake this off the way that he's doing, and that's a metaphor too, but for him to try and remove the stain of the racist that he has been exposed to be, and by forcefully staying in an office that he's been asked to relinquish, especially when you're dealing with black people, the state of Virginia has one of the worst and most atrocious histories of practicing racism on black people. And then you again, Black History Month, utter disrespect. When Dr. Wilson talked about in the clip about, you know, white people defecating and urinating on black people and things like that, that's what that was. That's a metaphorical version of defecating and urinating on black people. And like she said, the system of racism and white supremacy is one in which white people can do whatever they want to you, and you cannot do anything about it. Who's going to go up in there and remove him from office forcefully? And it's not going to be black people. So he's just going to stay, and nobody's going to be able to do anything about it. Unless you can find another powerful white person who takes the side of black people in stating you are racist, you need to go. And then that person drums up the support necessary to give him the pressure that's necessary to oust him from that position.
I think that was why.
So that's why. Go ahead.
What was the other senator's name?
So the black senator in the state?
Yes.
I can't remember. I'm seeing an image of him because I've seen an article, but I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
They say he was the only one wasn't calling for him to resign. So she asked him, was she calling for him to resign? He was very, very precise with his wording. Horrible liar, I guess, once you understand that's all he doing. But it's a lot of people that's going to believe that. And I'm wondering, should this be taken as a teachable moment to where you could show other people if they don't, you know, if they fully don't understand your counter-racist stance? Would this be one of those teachable moments where you could break down this little YouTube video to give them understanding?
Oh, yeah. I think it would bring home the importance of voting locally and in your state. The importance of the fact that these are people that make decisions that affect your daily reality. And if you don't choose the right people, then these are the people who you get. And like you showed last week, they were like, I remember there was an article or clip where white people were telling black people not to vote because they got this handled. If you're not doing something, guaranteed somebody else is doing it for you, and it's not going to be to your benefit, and they're going to be white. And this is the type of education that our people need, is to understand these things so that, yes, I'm not downing anyone who has a stance where they don't believe in voting. I could understand where that comes from. But just get a more holistic picture so you understand that that is an important thing to partake in, but it has to be in a certain context for it to be effective. And the context that's most effective is the context in which you're voting for your state, your local community leaders, things of that nature that affect your daily reality, your sheriff, all of that. Anyone who can affect every day that you wake up and leave your house to go to work and your children wake up and go to school, those are the people you want to make sure that you're fully aware of who they are, what their stance is, and before you put a vote, and make sure that you do vote, but before you give anyone your vote, that you know what they're about.
Yo,
and that's pretty much, go ahead.
No, my fault. Go ahead. You finish.
Oh, no, I was saying that to me, like, that's the teachable moment there, and the teachable moment in the sense that this is white psychopathology on full display, and none of his other Democratic or Republican counterparts on any significant level, I think that the numbers are insignificant about anyone speaking out against him. So this shows you the collective white psychopathology, that they don't give two hoops about anything to do with racism in black people. And it goes to show you how powerful racists are, to the point that they can nicely urinate and defecate all over you as a people, and you can't do anything about it.
Man.
That is a metaphorical version of urinating and defecating on people. And that's one thing I can say, is that when you see, even in the animal kingdom, an animal urinate or defecate on someone, it is an act of domination, just like rape. And again, not saying that black people don't do that, because we got R. Kelly as proof positive, but that is not historically an African thing. That is historically a European thing. To use feces and urine in that manner is a culturally European phenomena that now black people have adopted. we've been infected by sick people, like Baba Kamina has said. Black people were not sick. We were infected by sick people. So now we do sick things too.
Man.
But that is an act of domination. Go ahead.
Just to go back to what he was saying about the about how they done improved on the laws there in Virginia. You know, I have family in Virginia, and they have some of the worst mm-hmm. laws for black people, like you was saying. So he said that they have been doing better. So it's you know, the system isn't broken. It's working just fine. Because exactly. That's what it was designed to do. But if you wanted to get into another one of those clips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me just check and look here real quick.
Oh, you got your notes.
Yeah, I took a couple little notes here. I think what was another one that was really good was when you did play the Dr. Wilson clip about when there are no black people around, that white folks are always talking negatively about black people, and the assumption is that everyone is in agreement. I think that that is one of the most important things that can be shared, and it shows the obsessive compulsiveness of genetic annihilation in the psyche of white people, and how that is the overarching religion that they practice, the overarching culture that they practice, and way of life that they practice. Now, the other aspect is people will say that that not all white people are racist, which I can say to a degree is true, but to me, it's all about context too. So you have the active white supremacists and you have the passive ones who don't do or say anything to stop the active ones. And most people will say the ones that are not active are actually the ones that aren't racist, because they don't directly practice racism. But the reality is, if you're just sitting back allowing this to happen and you're not doing anything about it, then you're just as complicit as the person who's actively doing it too. So it's a lot that goes into that concept. But to me, a great, because I had a guy who I used to be friends with, a white guy, and he was a person who had done a lot of activist work. He had done interviews. He's a filmmaker, so he's done like documentaries dealing with different racial issues and political issues. He's done traveling across the country dealing with this stuff in America specifically. And he has, on many occasions, literally just mauled white folks that have come with that same premise. And he told me the same thing. He'll be in a certain situation, there's no black people, it's white people that are doing whatever grassroots planning and stuff. And somebody or a couple of people will start this conversation, seemingly innocuous, and then it goes into the racism realm. And he said it to me himself, not in those exact terms, but ultimately that the assumption is everyone is in agreement. And when he would go off on them, they would kind of be so shocked and taken aback because they're not expecting that to come from him. So this is something I've heard firsthand. And again, even him as a one person saying something in that moment and going against what's being said isn't really changing anything. All it's doing is getting them to shut up in that meeting, if they so choose, because they can probably overpower him as far as just not even paying attention to anything he has to say. But usually white people pay attention to and listen to other white people, depending on the context and who is able to make the bigger power play when they're at odds with each other. So this is something I've heard about. And a lot of times our people make really, really bad decisions because we assume that we're all the same. And we make a lot of decisions that put us sometimes in life-threatening situations because we don't learn to have a healthy suspicion of all white people, unless the white person in some form or fashion proves themselves to you on a personal level in which you feel that you can, in some capacity, be comfortable in their presence and not see them as you see everyone else as far as that overt intense suspicion. And it ties back to even this, the story we discussed last week with the black woman that moved to Colorado with her children and had no idea she was next to an arch white supremacist. And now she lives every day in terror that he could potentially kill her or her children because he stabbed up her dog and he racially, verbally assaulted and terrorized her while holding her at shotgun point, calling her all kind of niggas. So I think that that clip was very important just for that, the value of that. And like she said, it's not about hating white people. It's about understanding who and what you're dealing with and making preemptive decisions so that you don't end up putting yourself in a potentially dangerous situation by being unassuming. I don't know if you want to add to that too.
No, we can just move on. For the callers, I'm not sure if it was, there's an echo. So I don't know if you listen through the computer when you call in, but it's an echo. But it, whenever you're ready, press ** and open up your mics when we're ready to hear your comments. But yeah, that was a very in-depth explanation with a story. You know what I'm saying? That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That he will even tell you that. You know, because sometimes some of them don't even have those type of friends. Mm-hmm. Or if that's what you want to call
them. Yeah, he's one that we could have those conversations. And he would ask me about a lot of things. And I would be quite candid with him. And he would be quite candid with me. And sometimes he would even be candid in a so-called joking manner. So, like, he'll have certain things happen to him because he was always a person that always seemed to be very lucky. Like, he would always tend to be in the right place at the right time, and things would just always tend to happen for him. And he would actually chalk it up to the fact that he was a white male. Like, he would actually say it jokingly, but he understood the truth in the joke. Yeah. So, I mean, like, it was something, and he had seen certain struggles that I had, especially, like, in the work arena. You know, at times when I was laid off from different positions, and I might have been between jobs and, you know, things like that. So he had gotten to see through me, and he had other black friends too, the types of adversity we face as black males dealing with racism. And in his own life, he was the type of person that can leave a job today, and in less than a week's time, he got a new job paying him more than the last job, and he's doing whatever he wants. Like, that was a consistency with him that I was just like, wow, I've never seen somebody who just always lands on their feet like this. So, It was a very interesting relationship while it lasted, but it's been long over now. But
that was we're gonna speak more about that. But we have a caller.
Mm-hmm.
Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? And what's your question or comment?
Peace, it's Cujo.
Greetings.
Yes, greetings to the callers and listeners. Just really like adjustments when it comes to a lot of this. I've been just making a lot of adjustments, and I realize, you know, my significant other, she has a lot of white friends, and I feel like I'm understanding more and more why, you know, she makes the adjustments and caters to them. But I'm not sure how good that is at the end of the day in regards to as a whole in seeing things, you know, because to me, I see her friends as being enablers. They somewhat subjugate her, you know, and as I'm the first black male she's been with. And I think that she's understanding more and more what I go through and seeing it firsthand. And to me, there's only two ways you can go after being with a black male that's less confused. And, you know, I'm still confused, but I'm less confused. There's only two ways you could really go. It's either you completely forget about what you just understood and what you just learned and say, well, to hell with it. Or you try to find somebody similar. And, I don't know. To me, it's a lot of work. I feel like I have to do things in increments because there's some people that will understand and automatically be like, I get it, I see it, I know what it is. And then there's some people that will, you know, they'll placate. They need more time to adapt and adjust to things that they see, hear, know, see, and understand. You know, that's pretty much the bulk of what I got to say.
Quick question.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Is it a question of them understanding or implementing what you're showing them?
I think it's more of a question of it's understanding more. Recently, and I'll keep it real. Ross, I went to that Barnes and Noble that's in Park Slope.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about. I've been to that since I was like, I don't even know, since I was like 19, 20, you know, and I'm not a spring chicken anymore, for lack of a better analogy. And there with her this time, I got followed every single where I went. And you know, there's a lower level and there's a higher level.
Right.
No matter where I went, I got followed to the point where I had to.
Was that the first time you were followed there?
No, it's not the first time, but it's the worst.
Okay.
Meaningly, like, yeah, it was just too much. Like, no matter where I went. Yeah. And you know, I had to address the manager, like, is this what you're teaching people? Is this what the procedure is when you guys are training? Because it's an issue. And I told her to stay back, to fall back, to act like you're not even with me, like stay in the foreground. And she then, in the middle of me talking to the manager, came in and said, I saw it, you know. And it was important for me to see that she came in and wanted to address it. To seek justice, because ultimately it's only going to be a situation. And I told her this, I said, because I'm one of the first black males you've dated that's less confused, you're going to see more when you're with me and you're going to understand exactly what I'm talking about, because you might have dated other black males, but they might have not seen it because they're not looking for it.
Right.
Understand what I'm saying? Like, they're not aware. So it's a little bit of like her understanding, because she's with me. So she then sees it because she's with me. And the other side of it is her actually being willing to participate in the situation. And she did, which I was very, you know, I'm happy with. You know, but I won't lie to you and say that she sees things the way that I do. And it's something that you guys have been addressing quite frequently, which is she's educated and under the context of college graduate and the educated black female, you know, and I think they are the most difficult people to reach amongst this generation. You know, I'm what they would classify as a Generation X. And she would be classified as a millennial, you know, and I just don't, you know, I notice that they're not seeing things the same way we see them. They need to be more educated than we even imagine, you know.
Yeah, I would say the educational institution, period, is one of the most important indoctrination tools that the system of white supremacy has. So if you have a person who's a child and they don't come from a family that has an understanding of the system of white supremacy and who's open and honest about it and who's rooted in knowledge of self as far as knowing who they are as African descendant people and our experience and instill that in their children, then what happens is they go into the system and get lost. They get completely lost. That was the main focus of my wife and myself as parents when my son was in the entire educational system, but especially when he went to high school, because of the type of high school he went to. It was pretty much a high-end white high school. And the history of the school itself dates back to slavery. like, you know, they actually had slaves on the ground. They actually, the school itself was the high school that plantation owners down south would send their children to up here in order to learn how to take over the plantation and dominate black people. And then Princeton is not too far from there. Princeton was the college that slave owning families would send their children to be indoctrinated on how to further. And so the legacy of the school itself. And then the school is you know, a school that's fully housing some of the most elite children on the planet. They're coming from Sweden. They're coming from China. They're coming from Japan. They're coming from the Caribbean islands. They're coming from everywhere. And all of them, no matter what country they come from, for the most part, are people who are affluent. So it was a whole, and it even went so far as to go to African traditional priests, the Yoruba priests, on multiple occasions. And they made sure that it was abundantly clear to my wife and myself that that would be our main focus as his parents, is to make sure he stays rooted in what we provided to him since he was born, in order that we don't lose him. And thankfully, we were able to successfully do that. He, as a less confused young black male, understood that himself and made his own strides towards making sure he was rooted in his Africanness, even in that environment. And he would also try to spread that to other black males while he was on campus. So I think with your significant other, remember that it's going to be very hard, if not impossible, to find a black male and black female who are both less confused and they come into a relationship with each other. That's going to be so rare in this country. So what's going to happen is you're always going to have one of the two that's less confused. And if that person is dedicated to seeking an understanding of the system of white supremacy and about trying to facilitate justice in their own united, independent way, then the onus will be on that particular partner in the relationship to assist the partner who's more confused in becoming less confused. And as long as that partner is open to that, and to me, you got a great sign that what you've been saying has had a positive effect on her via the fact that she came to your defense. So this went from you being solo to now a united defense against something she bore witness to, and she wanted to be a part of trying to facilitate some semblance of justice in that moment on your behalf. So whatever you've been doing with her is working. And that's a good sign that it's working. And I think that if you're taking an approach that's understanding and not judgmental, you can facilitate that in many, many ways to make that good. Let me just run into this quick commercial and then we'll be right back, okay? You are now live on Real Life, the radio show with myself, Ross, and my co-host, Jennifer Ross. If you do wish to call in and ask a question or make a comment, please give us a call at 704-802-5056. Again, that's 704-802-5056. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment. And please watch your background noise. Thank you very much for being with us this evening.
To run out for a second.
Hey, it's all good.
You was getting ready to say something, Cujo. Go ahead. Your mic's open.
Yes. A lot of the issues I've noticed, this clash is Because you know, I'm working on this and communicating with my significant other, and she's really been great and receptive. But you know, I'm not attacking, I'm not judgmental, am not coming at her as this kind of authority. And I think a lot of the problem that we might face with a lot of black females is non-white females is that like we may need to fall back a lot of times and let them come to their own and see it for what it is instead of passing judgment. And I've been, you know, I've been saying this to her and she's been understanding it, and now she's seeing it more and more. And that's the most, you know, it's the most gratifying thing to me so far. And I've been really happy with that because, you know, it's frustrating doing it alone. You know, it's frustrating. And especially in New York City, when you're walking around and you're dealing with other people that are non-white and they don't understand what you're saying. They don't know what's going on. But gradually they see, you know, she sees, actually, I apologize, she sees what's going on, and bit by bit is starting to open up her mind and getting a chance to be exposed to the pressures and the dilemma of a black male. Because no matter what, even when she's around white people, there's a different, they address her differently because she's a black female, as opposed to when I'm there. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you guys about, is like, have you noticed that when white people or not, well, white, non-white females are around white people, they address them differently as opposed to when they address them when they're around both non-female and both non-white female. I just want to make sure you understand.
Yeah, say that last part one more time. Cujo.
Say that again?
That last part. You said both non-white females.
And non-white males. Because what I've noticed is that non-white people will, they address non-white females very different. And obviously gender-based, and they deal with white, non-white males. You know, there was a gentleman out of the West Indies. He's a sociologist. His name is, I believe, Hubert Gale. He's from Jamaica, and he noticed something. He said that the issue of violence in the West Indies is tending from the fact that they'll may have 15 schools that are female dominated, and then they'll have 5 schools that are male dominated. And that stems from the colonialism, where the colonists came in and said, yo, we need to make sure that there are non-white females that are willing, ready and willing to do the work, but we make sure that we limit the amount of educated non-white males. So they would only have like 5 schools. And this is, I'm talking about Jamaica. This is how they do it in Jamaica. They'll have way more white female schools than they'll have non-white male schools. And I think that carried on into the States in some strange way, where at this current time, there are black females that are graduating at a higher rate than black males. So a black female graduates and she looks at a black male that isn't graduated, that doesn't have that much, and says, well, you ain't doing nothing because you didn't do what I did. Why can't you do what I did? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. And I understand why that's being done. And there is a reason.
Hold on, before you go into your explanation, Roz. Carla, we see you. We'll come to you just as soon as Roz give his answer. Go ahead, Roz.
Okay. Thank you. And what it is in the traditional African family structure, the vast majority of the societies were matrilineal. You did have some patrilineal African societies, but they were very few in comparison to the matrilineal system. And as a result, what you find is that the women were the nucleus of the family. And of course, like I've always said, a nation, the founding unit of a nation is the family. So if you can get to the nucleus of the family, then you change the entire structure of the family and how it functions without any sort of inhibition, because the mother is not just the birther of males and females, but the first teacher. So if you can indoctrinate her into working against her best interest, unbeknownst to herself, which of course, like many, I forget who the famous person is that said it, but a lot of other people have said it, and I've said it too. The definition of power is getting someone to do something that you want them to do, but think that they thought of it themselves.
Mm.
And that is exactly what the reason is for having the women, more women being educated than men. Number one, in all societies globally, in the entire existence of human history, there's always been more females than males, because males die fighting for women, defending their families, all kinds of different causes. Whereas women, because they tended to, in the traditional family structure, work at home and till the fields and things like that, there was a lesser chance for mortality than men. So ultimately, what that is there's more of them than us, and then they're the nucleus of the family structure that can educate children from birth with whatever we give them. So ultimately, when you see that our women go to school, when you start to really look holistically, you see that a lot of the same shortcomings in understanding the world that we live in and the system that we live in, you'll find that to be consistent in college-educated females, and you'll find the same consistency amongst college-educated Black males as well, because they're all getting the same type of indoctrination. And that is, number one, to be a good worker for someone else, not to be entrepreneurs and own your own and go back to your community and do something to uplift the economic situation there by having a thriving business amongst your own community and your people where you exist on a daily basis. It's also about a political indoctrination. Every one of the 10 areas of people activity, 11 areas of people activity, are in themselves, in some form or fashion, political as well. And all politics really is just warfare that's nonviolent. It's using ideologies and it's using power and control in a more holistic way. So in reality, when you send your child to school, you're sending them to the basic indoctrination mechanism of your enemy every day. If they're not going to a school that's run and owned by Black people dealing with issues that pertain to the Black struggle and how to survive in the world that we live in, then they're going to an indoctrination institution every single day. And if you're not doing something at home to offset the indoctrination of your child, then you're going to have a child that worships white people. You're going to have a child that thinks against their best interests from an extremely young age. And then they come home, and if you sit them in front of the TV, they're getting the full indoctrination visually of white people being better, being prettier, being smarter, being less criminal, and all of that. And this is all a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the system feeds itself. Mm. It feeds itself. And in feeding itself, it's feeding us what we need in order to continue to feed it. Black people are the batteries of this system. If we removed ourselves from the equation, the entire system would collapse completely. But it is nothing without Black people not loving what they see in the mirror. And that is what school indoctrinates our women into doing. When you come as a male that's less confused, and they have an ideology of a foreign people, foreign female people, who have indoctrinated them into their system of feminism and stuff, then you have a potent mix for enmity between the Black male and female. And especially if that Black male is less confused. So you have to then take the inroads, and it's going to take tons and tons of patience and understanding, and probably a lot of failed relationships before you come in contact with someone that, if you are the less confused person in the relationship, where you can build something lasting potentially and have a family or attempted family and do the things that we all try to do as, you know, living human beings and whatnot, as far as procreation and raising children. So I hope I wasn't too long-winded, but I hope I made sense as well. Let me know if I didn't, or if there's any other questions you have.
No, it adds up. It all adds up, and it's basically time and patience. It's just patience, hands down. That's what it sounds like, and I have to be patient in that regard. And not only speak, but I have to listen. That's what it sounds like, and I'm still doing that. You know, as Nelly fully said, still learning. You know.
Yes.
So yeah. I'll mute my line. I have another question, but please, other callers.
All right. Thanks, Cujo.
Thank you.
Caller, greetings. What's your name? Where you calling from? And what is your question or comment? Welcome to Real Life.
Welcome. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, greetings.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is EW from Florida.
Great.
I didn't have any comments. I was actually just listening. I called in a little late, so I was trying to catch up on the conversation.
Oh, my apologies. I thought you opened up your mic. But just okay. Press star if you want to be heard, and your mic will be open. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I just wanted to say something to what Cujo was talking about, because I remember I was always the less confused person in the relationship with my wife. We've been together now 24 years and really doesn't feel like it at all, but it's weird that it is that long. Weirdly enough, I was the less confused person. So she was always getting African history and just everything. I was just giving it to her, just a total infusion of it constantly. And when I came across the cow, a number of years ago, my language started to change based on me getting a deeper understanding of Neely Fuller's work via his program. And I remember, and this was during the same time that we had just found out that my in-laws were seriously ill and she became their caregiver. So this was all happening around the same time. And my language started to change, me just using more precise counter-racist language that she noticed. And she said, where are you getting this from? And what do you mean non-white people and racist white supremacists? And she was just asking me all these questions. So then eventually I just started to slowly give her the information as well. And it took me a while to be patient, because I'm a very, very alpha kind of personality. And I go hard when I learn something that's new and it's something that I know is correct and accurate, I go all the way in. There's nothing that stops me from changing my behavior. That's just something I've learned over the years, but it's something that was always a part of me. Ultimately, from what I've learned, if you learn something new and you know that it is right and exact and correct, and you don't change your behavior, then you really haven't learned anything, because you haven't changed anything. It's taking that information and applying it and seeing it play itself out in you being consistent about using that information correctly. That's what I've always done. So with that, it was the same thing. And I can be so intense with that I had to actually learn to scale back. And it was both my wife and son were like, my son was like, Dad, like, I get it, but you just, you're a little too intense for me. So over time, I learned how to temper it properly. And my wife, it grew exponentially. She's still more confused because of the abuse she suffered from other Black people. But her language has changed, and she uses counter-racist language. She loves the term anti-Blackness, because now she says she has a term to describe what she experiences from both Black people sometimes and from white people. So she's become less confused herself, and she's codified. She uses the term codification, being codified, all of this stuff now. And to look at who she once was to who she has become, it's incredible. And that just took an immense amount of patience and an immense amount of me scaling back myself, because I know the type of person I am, and I know the intensity that I can bring to the transformative process. And with that, I had to learn how to adjust to who she was and her learning process and her speed of learning. And then I started to get the proper response. And then she would just ask questions and I would just answer those questions. And sometimes she would have experiences that would mirror stuff that I told her, that maybe before it didn't resonate, but once she had the experience, she came back and said, oh, wow, now I understand when you said such and such and so and so, why you told me this. And that's what you're doing, too. You just allow her to have certain experiences that will give her the insight that she may not get from what you might tell her firsthand off the cuff. And with that, you'll have that growth and development, and it'll be a thing that happens to you together. You'll just be the person doing a lot of the facilitating as the less confused person in the relationship. So you're growing, and then you're actually trickling it down to her, and then you guys can grow together. And as she becomes more independent in her own study, she'll start coming to you with stuff, and y'all will be able to bounce off each other. And it'll be something that can be very powerful as far as how you guys choose to move forward with your family and raise your children when it comes to that particular point in your relationship. So that's my suggestion there, because that's been my personal experience in my marriage. Go ahead.
Pardon. I was just wondering, what do you guys both think about anti-blackness? I mean, like, right now in the month of February, so-called Black History Month, there's just so much happening right now. And I got to tell you, it's just, it can't be an accident. It can't be an accident that we see the Gucci thing occurring, the Virginia situation occurring.
We just talked about all of that, yep.
Then on top of that, we have, and we spoke about this, the Brazil editor of Vogue attending.
Yes, I put an intense article about that from the Black Women of Brazil on BTR Community yesterday. But go ahead, let your audience know about it.
Yeah, she basically attended. She basically attended for her 50th birthday. They celebrated it by having a makeshift Black slavery birthday party. So all the people that were servants as if they were Black servants in subjugation, in slavery, while everybody around them is like celebrating and having a great old time. And the Black women and men, the Black women were servants looking straight like mammies, and the Black men were looking like, you know, quote unquote, Uncle Toms, like they just were, you know, serving food and such forth. It was just... It was just disgusting. And the aspect, and this is where, you know, the confusion question comes up, is like, who is more confused about racism, white supremacy, white people or non-white people? And I mean, come on.
There is no question that it's non-white people. The thing about it, go ahead.
I'm finished, please.
Okay. I was going to say, the thing about it is that this stuff is not new. I just think that we live in an age in which access to the truth is much more readily available. Everyone has a camera now. So you can't, back in the days, these things were done behind closed doors and no one ever saw it. It was a word of mouth thing, if you ever heard of it at all.
Whereas today,
everyone has a camera. So the same stuff is happening at the same rate it was happening back then. It's just that it's being exposed more. Now, this shows really what affluent upper echelon racist white supremacists, the real white supremacists, these are the people who are really supreme. These are the ones who really are in control of reality as we live it, how they think and really feel about Black people and the things that they actually do. This slave parties are not new. You know what I mean? And a lot of times they also would include those Black people who are the servants and stuff doing the same thing that slaves did, which was also provide sexual favors. These things would happen at those parties. You might, and if you notice, they had the white, they're kind of like their pants that we used to wear in Africa that they had here as well, like white cotton, and the men had no tops on.
Right.
So you would also have homosexual men that would, you know, pick one of those bucks, quote unquote, to have trysts with. You would have white women that would do the same. You would have, you know, lesbian white women do the same thing with Black females that they were attracted to. And it was a free fall. It was basically an orgy as well. So it wasn't just them being servants. They were serving in every way humanly possible that you can serve, against their will or whatever. So these fantasies are what they really want to go back to. and they just they do it behind closed doors. And a lot of times, and depending on the country and stuff like that, because Brazil has such a they have like over 26 different racial categories for so-called mixed race people and who's black and who's white and all of this stuff. So there's such a confusion around all of that. And even though racism is what it is, as far as what we all experience, it's in different contexts and capacities. So you have more confused people. And sometimes it's a way for them to make a dollar. So these people are like, hey, I'm poor. This person's offering me XYZ to put on this manly outfit and serve them some drinks. Okay, I'll do it. Sometimes they're not even understanding of the fact that they're disrespecting themselves and their entire familial legacy as African descended people by doing these things. They're just trying to make a dollar. Just like in the beginning of the entertainment industry in America, black people could only play mammies and step and fetches and slaves and all of that stuff. That was the only way you were ever going to see a black person on screen. So somebody had to take the job. We may not like it, but that's what created that inroad is what later on gave people like Paul Mooney and Richard Pryor the ability to be on national television telling everybody the truth about white folks.
But question.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing is like the timing of all this, like the fact that they're like that. Yeah, that's exactly the big point of this is like the timing of this is no accident. And it seems like they're not almost, they're making sure that, yes, Black History Month, they're trying to make sure that we are not having any space whatsoever that is kind of null and void, where they can actually see, where we can actually see ourselves in a positive light, so that they can maintain their supremacy. Because right now, I feel like what they're doing with social media and all these other aspects is data mining. They're trying to data mine and see who's who, what's what, what's a threat, what's not a threat. And then at the same time, they're trying to maintain these images. That's the reason why we see all the black men getting shot and killed and all these videos and all this stuff gets put on YouTube and they never get pulled down. You know what I mean? From Tamir Rice and on. And from what I'm seeing and understanding is like, that's exactly the whole same thing with this that they're showing us now with this slavery thing that's going on in Brazil. It's like, oh, it's not just in the States. It's all over.
Without question.
And that's the thing that's disturbing is like the fact that they're putting this out on a consistent basis makes me lead to the next step, which is, all right, you're data mining. And then at the same time, you want to keep projecting this image to keep us down mentally and physically to those who are to those of us who have a harder time dealing with these subliminal messages and still maintaining our strength. They're doing something else in the background. And that's where I'm kind of wondering, like, what is up next? And that's the part that's disturbing to me. That's the part that I'm concerned about, because that's where I think that for those of us that are still standing, they got something else left.
I would say this. Dr. Clark said this back in early 90s, right before he passed away. And Dr. Wilson said this as well shortly before she passed away. And what they both said, I'm paraphrasing, is essentially the system of white supremacy wants to go back to a more overt form of racism, white supremacy, akin to when we were overt slaves under depressed conditions working in the field. Like, she basically what they were saying that. Dr. Clark even said the educational system in America is geared towards getting black people in America towards accepting their own re-enslavement. Those are his exact words. And what you're seeing is, and I said this earlier, you might have missed it, but I said that all of these incidences happening during Black History Month, because remember, Black History Month as a global phenomenon was created by an American African. But there's many countries around the world that have adopted Black History Month in their respective countries during the same time. And it's specifically to coincide with what Carter G. Woodson facilitated many years ago. So this is where you're seeing the global disrespect. And what it is it's a barometric test, that they're doing a barometric test to see collectively where black people are psychologically about their understanding of what white people is doing to them, are doing for them at this particular stage. Because remember, they're dying faster than they're being born. You have governments of other countries begging other white countries to send men to sleep with their women. They're even offering them places to live. There's towns full of women that they want to offer them. I know in Italy they were doing that, and a couple of other European countries. So they know that they are not going to be left here in any significant number in the coming decades to directly maintain the system. So they have to create proxies through which they can remote control. Thus, black women in the educational system, thus the Latino community in the United States, they are now pandering to the Latino community and giving them, in my opinion, they're in the process of transforming how they are viewed as far as them being looked at as white people, so that they can take over the inheritance of those benefits, so that as white people start to dwindle off, as far as real white people dwindling off, they have these proxies that they can use as puppets to facilitate their white supremacist machinations moving forward. So that's, it's a lot to take in. But I would say that these are the types of things we have to remain vigilant about and continue to talk about. And because there's so many different angles that these things are taking place. And if we miss the understanding, it can put us in a whole nother situation. Like I said earlier, they've been so successful with the anti-sexual agenda amongst black people and getting a lot of homosexual black people to put their sexuality above their blackness, which was something that you can see historically was not something that ever was a problem in the past. When you look at people like James Baldwin and Langston Hughes, these people understood that they were being mistreated because they were black and had nothing to do with their sexual orientation. Today, the complete opposite is the truth. So now they've done such a great job with that, they're going back to racism, white supremacy, and they needed to get a barometric test on where are black people psychologically now? Can we go a little bit deeper towards, you know, pre-1865 slavery? And will they be accepting of that? Let's do the barometric test. Gucci, you're going to put that sweater out with that black face on it? We're just going to bombard them during Black History Month with all kind of horrific racist things and see how they collectively respond to those things. And based on that, we'll know how far we've made our progress in re-indoctrinating them at this particular point. That's my opinion. I could be incorrect.
Is one of
y'all? No, it's a great point. Sorry.
No, I keep hearing a tap. But go ahead, Cujo. Go ahead.
Oh no! I was just saying like that is definitely accurate. I think that's pretty much they're doing. They're testing our threshold to see how far we will go until we explode. And the biggest thing I've noticed is that I'm concerned about is just that, man, I just run into so many non-white males, non-white females that just don't care, that it's concerning. It's concerning. And I spoke to you last week about an event I went to, a town hall, because they're trying to open up four new jails in all the four boroughs in New York City. And unfortunately, the majority of people that were there were anti-sexual, you know, LGBTQ, whatever, you know, they, you know, and, you know, I'm not saying that they're not, you know, gay black males in jail. Obviously they are, but for the most part, it tends to be heterosexual, you know? So here I was at this meeting and it's not a lot of us that are even aware about this situation going on. And it draws an exclamation point. It draws a concern because I don't think we're even aware of half the stuff that's going on right now, much less a minute amount of it. And, there's going to be more changes going on, and I think you're right. They're still just testing us, engaging. How far can they go? How far can they push us? And what exactly are we going to? Like, and what could be more of the solutions? Because I'm on the plantation in corporate America, and I'll tell you, man, like, we don't even greet each other.
Oh, yeah.
You know? We don't even greet each other in the office when we're in on the plantation. I don't know how it's gonna occur when we're in other situations that may be more dire, you know? It just draws a red flag. That's what I'm saying. What's going on right now, the Gucci situation, the Virginia situation, the Liam Neeson situation, mm-hmm. like they're all just big red flags to go, yo, they're really testing us out to see what's going on. Because a lot of these things even occurred, if I remember correctly, when some of the Trayvon Martin things were happening. And yeah. That's same around the same time. Like, not an accident at all. Not a coincidence at all. You know, with that said, I'll mute my line.
Well, thanks again for your input. I think we can really thank television and social media. I've never seen more shows catering to the rogue psychological and psychosexual machinations of white supremacy on television than there is now. And then when you deal with social media, you're talking about straight up addiction. And there's tons and tons of black people addicted to social media. So most black people have no concept of the economic collapse that's coming. They don't know about anything. And most of them don't really care because they're wrapped up in Empire and whatever other shows they have on. And they're wrapped up on their social media, wanting to get the dopamine rush of having someone like their post or something like that. So you have so much indulgence in the nonsensical, but that ties into the clip we have with Neely Fuller, where he talked about white people hating black people doing anything constructive. Because when we do things constructive amongst ourselves, it means that their system is going to begin to be over. So they have to do and put things out there to make us do non-constructive things at all times. And that is what it is. It's what when I put out that clip on our BTR community for Dave about the fall of Rome, and they were talking about bread and circus, that is the bread and circus. They're feeding black people a circus. The circus is infested with white supremacy. Be a lesbian. If you're a black woman, find yourself a white man. If you're a black man, find yourself a white woman. Or if you're gay, find yourself a white woman or an all-white man. Like, this is the stuff that's being put in front of us all the time. And that's the circus part. The circus is all of the negative things you see about black people on TV all the time. You know, the bread would be the welfare system, which they messed up when the government shut down. People couldn't get their welfare. So you got the bread and circus right there. And that's been the whole thing for black people. Black people are damn near our entire experience in this country. They really just recently started doing it to white people as the system is getting closer and closer to the economic collapse.
They're doing
it to them in a similar way that did it to us now. But before that, that's been our entire existence is bread and circus. We're going to feed you nonsense while we're terrorizing you and murdering you every day, and you can't do anything about it. That is why Phil from the Advice Show, he has a clip, I posted that on BTR2, where he goes through the FBI reports on the percentage of black people that are being racially terrorized, or just the percentage of racial terrorism in this country. And from 2010 to 2017, every time, we had exponential growth in the amount of terror that black people specifically experienced, as far as they specifically label it, the FBI labels it anti-black and anti-African-American racist attack. And it was always over 50% or well into the 60s, and in some cases 70% of all racist attacks had to do with anti-black, anti-American, African attacks. And he was talking about, as we are seeking for reparations, American descendants of slavery doing what they're doing, to have a special status created for American Africans based on their historical experience collectively as a group in this country that is separate from all other immigrant groups and from all other so-called minority groups, which I completely agree with. He said you have to add to the mix making the category of being black a protected status in this country. And he used those statistics from the FBI showing that we are the overwhelming exponential victims of racist attacks and murders throughout this country every single year as the premise. Because remember, when they kill black people, they're killing you whether you're from Africa, the Caribbean, or an American African. As long as your skin is black, you're going to be subject to terrorism and potential death and murder in this country. So he was saying that that has to be a part of our agenda, the same way Jews have a protected status. You can't say anything you want about a Jew because of their experiences in the Holocaust. You can't do anything you want to a Jew because the consequences will be extremely high and extremely painful if you touch them because of their protected status. That is the type of status that we need in this country as well, and I agree with him completely. So,
man,
I just wanted to toss that out there. Go ahead.
I don't think I even checked that one out.
It was really, really good. It was about 12 minutes long, but I mean, like, he read each of the reports, and the more he went in, he was just like, this is why we need a protect. And I was just like, you're absolutely correct. You do, because I always say, how can we really, really ask for reparations when we're perpetually still being racially assaulted and terrorized still? So they have to have a perpetual state of reparations for us until they stop practicing racism on us. And that's not going to stop. Go ahead.
Ross, that's the thing that I'm concerned about, is just the fact that in order to, if we were to have reparations, the majority of the so-called families that amass their enormous amounts of wealth off of the backs of African descendants of slavery, like, and it would basically lead to the country a huge shift of wealth being taken from the so-called 1-2% to the bottom. I mean, and I really mean the quote-unquote bottom. Like, we would be the ones that gather all that wealth because we're the ones that have been subjugated for this enormous amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see them even doing that because it's not possible for them to maintain the so-called society of America or United States and giving us reparations. If they gave us reparations, they would lose all the power that they have because they're fully aware that political power is not based on who is actually putting up the best policies. The political power is based on who is actually, quote unquote, financing the policies that they want in place.
You
know, and
hold on.
Sorry, go ahead.
I don't mean to cut you off, Cujo, but you just sparked this question. And I would ask this to you and Roz and any other callers and listeners. Let's say they wasn't going to give no money and somebody still went up there to get some other forms of reparations. What would be a few of the things you would ask for, like Roz presented, becoming a protected status, having a protected status? What other things should we ask for?
Hold on. I think one of the main things is definitely what Roz mentioned. Like, he's spot on with that. Like, us actually having some protected status. But that protected status would only be respected if we had the finance and power to implement like extreme prejudice against anybody who goes against us. Henceforth, the Hasidic Jews in Brooklyn, if you do anything against a Jewish person, like these two, quote unquote, I believe, I think you guys have seen them, these two non-white females, Arabic in a sense, that spoke up, and they didn't even speak up. They put Twitter remarks out about Israel. Like, you put anything out about Israel that's negative or actually factual that they don't agree with, you will get chastised and handled quickly. You will be labeled anti-Semitic and all that. Now, is that just what happened to them? I don't agree with it. No, not at all, because they're being actual and they're telling the truth. But in a situation with us, we need to actually have that power first, as far as the finances first, to then implement the power to say, oh, you're going to talk bad about against us? We need to check you, you know. But I think one of the things is we shouldn't even be paying no taxes. We shouldn't be paying education-wise, as far as schools and education, we shouldn't be paying for anything. We should be able to go to any college, any school deemed permissible. And once we do certain things, I think there should be some kind of there should be some kind of way that once we go through the proper channels, that we would be able to get land. Because so much of land was taken away from us. We could talk about Tulsa, Oklahoma. We could talk about that. We could talk about Rosebud and all these other places. But there are a lot of other places throughout the country where Klan's members just walked on a black man's property and a family's property, a black family's property, and said, this is ours, with shotguns and rifles in hand. And we turned the other way and said, we don't want to die. Take the property. We're gone. You know, we don't talk about that aspect. And I think that's something that's really important. If somebody shows that they can handle the land, they could till the land in a just manner, that they should get property immediately. They should not be pushed to the side, because there was a stint, and I don't know if you guys remember, where the government, and this was during George Bush Sr., where the government was giving out subsidiaries to white farmers, but they weren't giving any out to black farmers in the same aspect. And I think that's a major thing. That's just getting land and education will put us in such a great position that I just don't see too much stopping us after that. And they're fully aware of that. And I'll mute my line.
That was a nice start for a list. What would be on your list, Roz?
I think there should be and it really falls in line with the ADOS movement, as far as them, American descendants of slavery, having benefits that no other group in the country has access to. You have to be a descendant of an American African slave in order to have access to those benefits. No immigrants, I don't care what country you come from and whether you're black or not. No other group should have access to those benefits. They should be locked out because they're not that group. These people are the most important black group in the country, as the foundational black group that suffered through the terrorism of racism and white supremacy to make it possible for every other group of black people that come here to come here on a plane and not in shackles at the bottom of a ship. So as a result, they should have that status, just like in the other parts of the world, the black people of those countries that were oppressed and victims of white supremacy in their respective lands should have the same thing. And those other immigrants that come from countries, like my family came from Trinidad, so if we're going to ask for reparations, we got to go to Britain for it. We can't ask American Africans to give us a part of their reparation package when our struggle wasn't here. Our struggle was someplace else. It's just correct. It's just the way things are supposed to be. And I think that that's a major thing. I think that black people should have access to free genetic testing for those that wanted to find out where in Africa their ancestors came from. I think they should have free access to language courses if they want to learn the language of, you know, their respective ethnic group that they came from on the continent. I think they should have free trips if they wanted to take a trip back to those lands and just get to see and connect with their relatives that are still there that were not taken from there. And if they wanted to learn about who they are, they should have complete access to those things. I think that should just go without saying and go without question. I agree with Cujo. They should have free education. They shouldn't have to. They shouldn't have to ask for anything, and they should not be paying taxes. Taxes was free labor. My taxes, if I'm a descendant of an American descendant of slavery, my taxes was my ancestors' free labor. You could kick rocks when it comes to paying taxes, and that should just be the way that it is, because mm-hmm. America wouldn't be anything without the complete domination and oppression and vampire and leeching of African people. Mm. African people have revolutionized the growth and development of every single European country that exists. And there is just impossible to quantify how much of the driving force and engine of the system of white supremacy African people were and still are to this very day. And when it comes to that, there just has to be a hierarchy of respect for those people whose blood is in the soil. You know, that's just the way it is. I have a friend from Ghana who lives in the Bronx. And when I travel from Jersey to the Bronx, he actually does a ritual to the deities of the local area in Jersey where I'm from to get me safe to where he is. And he also does one when I leave for me traveling home, because in African culture, there's deities local to the space that you live, and you have to honor and respect them because of the history of that land and that space. These are all things that American Africans are completely out of touch with. They have no concept of that because of what their experience has been holistically under a system of white supremacy. So they can't be blamed for it, but these are things that they can learn, especially once they have the opportunity to find out who they are without having to shell out thousands of dollars when they already shelled out millions and millions of ancestors. Hmm. Those things should be free. And I just think that there's so much that I guess I'll say adults for just a short term. There's so much that adults can do, because American Africans set the precedent for a lot of what the global African community attempts to do and facilitate. So if this happens here, you're going to see descendants of slavery in the UK start doing that. Descendants of slavery everywhere are going to start doing the same thing. So I think it's a great thing to do. I think like the guy Dinis Demir who has the Search for Yoruba, he talked about the fact that when American Africans go back to visit the castles, they should not be insulted by the governments of these African countries or the local area where they force them to pay the same rates to go to the slave castle as the white people who come there, when they are the ones whose ancestors came through the portals of those doors. You're going to make me pay, and not only just pay, but pay the white people's rate to go where my ancestors were kidnapped from? He talked about, you know, American Africans having a special status on the continent in certain countries where our ancestors came from. We should be able to get dual citizenship. I agree with him. And he said, go to any American embassy in New York or in D.C., go to one of the African countries that are directly involved in the slave trade of American Africans and tell them, I am a descendant of a slave. I want to go back home to Africa. Give me dual citizenship. And he said, they'll laugh you out of that embassy. He said, that should not be the way that it is. And I agree. It shouldn't be.
Yep.
Man. So these are all things that we have to start working on and considering. And there's a lot of moves being made towards addressing the diasporan connection with the continent, and a very, very specific moves with American Africans and their connection to the continent. These things are now in their beginning stages, but I could see this snowballing. So the possibility of the expansion of all of those things is definitely there with the things that are being planned and slowly worked on. But these are all things for us to consider as we move forward and start really thinking holistically again about what is our collective experience. Who are the people waging war on us? We're not at war, because we're not killing anyone. We're not going out, you know, doing anything to defend ourselves.
I say this.
We die individually by ourselves. And then people just raise Cain on social media. And then you move on to waiting for the next person to end up on the news. So we're not waging war. War is being waged on us. And we are so out of touch with ourselves in reality due to all of the distractions and confusion that is put in our way that we don't even understand that there's a war being waged on us. And it leaves us vulnerable to continuing the same experiences. Go ahead, Jenna.
We are down. We at the bottom of the... I mean, we at the top of the hour, excuse me.
Wow, yes.
So today's show, I think it played full circle. Thank you for your input. Roz, hit us with the prayer and take us out for the night.
Yes, sir. Thank you, everyone, for spending your Tuesday night and or evening into night with us. I hope our people in the Northeast are safe because it's quite icy and nasty out there, and it's going to be hectic in the morning when we travel. So stay safe, everyone. Stay warm as well. And please stay out of the hands of slave catchers. Sobriety will be best under conditions of white terrorism, as Gus would say. And just do your best to stay out of the hands and stay out of the way of slave catchers. Like Phil from the Advice Show says, keep your head on a swivel to make sure that you don't become one of those victims we find in one of those videos that are perpetuated. And just be prepared to take care of yourself and practice Black self-respect. I won't be able to make it on workplace racism this week, but I got a story of Black self-respect for y'all. I just went through some things on the job, so I'll get into that probably not this week, but the following week. But yeah, we're about to end the show tonight. But thanks, everyone, for spending your Tuesday evening with us. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you, Brother Cujo, for your insightful input and your thoughts and ideas, and to all the other callers and listeners as well, and to those who will listen to the podcast, we greatly appreciate you. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times and all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice as soon as possible, and let's end the prison industrial complex and human trafficking. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is. I am. The all can. I can. The all does. I do. Once again, thank you for spending your Tuesday evening with us. Please stay safe. Creator willing, we'll see you next week. Peace and love and good night.
Peace and love. Good night. Thank you again, Cujo.
Peace.